This Sunday.
Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them.
Here!
Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! But mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and Live Feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
I'm gonna sing it to my friends. I've got a song, I ain't got no melody. I'm gonna sing it to my friends.
All right, I'm not gonna sing it to my friends. I'm gonna bring my friends on with me today, folks, on Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, with your host, Ray Guarino, and the fabulous Chris Switzer. How are you, Chris?
I have my orthopedic socks on. I have my platform shoes on. I'm ready to dance the night away right here at Motormouth Radio.
Nice.
That's for sure.
Excellent. And if you're not in the mood for a car show of this sort today, I want to remind people that right now, as we speak, that Fort Town Fireman's Training Center in Merrick is the old spring dust-off. So
yes,
roll back the clock to spring on July 18th today, but it's going on till this afternoon, 9 to 4. So you want to get down there. They always have a good turnout, lots of great cars, and help support our friends from the Olds Club. Good guys.
And a nice spring, warm spring day in the summer.
It's beautiful today. Today is a real nice day here on Long Island. I don't know about where you're at, but it's kind of like a little bit of the humidity broke, and it got a lot nicer this morning than it has been the last few days.
Well, the gauge here is whatever you are, whatever temperature you are, we're about 10 degrees colder. And however rainy you are, we're about maybe an inch and a half less rainy. For some reason, we don't get as much rain. But we get double the amount of snow in the wintertime, so kind of all evens out.
Right. Good to know.
So we're talking to ourselves today, right? 516-572-7440. An exciting show, I may add.
Yeah, I had a conversation with one of our friends, our good show friends, Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts in Delaware.
I was
asking about relocation advice. So I was talking to him about what it's like to live in Delaware. But anyway, And I said I'd like to get him back on the show, and he said, "Yeah." So we're gonna. Tony is typically a little bit of a tougher guy to get a handle on. So we're going to be, I'll throw him some dates, and we'll see what happens, and we'll toss it around and get him back on the show.
Yeah, I want to stretch the wrinkles out of his brain and talk C-body Chryslers with him and watch him go, I don't do that.
Yeah.
Let's see how far I could take him with his Mopar knowledge far as C-body Chryslers.
Right.
So, hey, I got to talk to you a little bit about being a clown head.
Okay.
You know what? I had a very good friend of mine, missed him to death, a guy I knew in radio, one of my program directors, and he would say, everybody was a clown head. Look at that clown head over there. Watch that clown head. What is that clown head doing? Well, this week, I was an honorary clown head.
Okay.
You know what I did?
No.
I'll explain. Let me explain. I had the 300 out on a nice spring-like day in the summer. Driving along, I still have the top up though, but I'm driving and I look over and I have directly under the top of the dash are two slide levers that say vent. on them. There's two of them, obviously, one for one side, one under the kick panel, under the dash. There's a sort of vent-like thing. And then on the other side, on the passenger side, there's a similar thing. I know that they're there. I fixed the cable. I swear to God, this car was built by, like, the Conestoga wagon people. Who puts cables? It's like, what is this, a Fokker D7? One of those old German triplanes? It's like, what is this thing? So that's what I'm laughing, because it has this simple vent device to let fresh air in. The car obviously does not have air conditioning. So I know I had fixed it. I had repaired it, but I never opened the vents.
Okay.
So I'm driving along, bopping a bop, doing my big 40 miles an hour, and I slide the driver's vent open, thinking, let's see how much fresh air will come in.
You get hit by a bird?
Yeah. I got hit with more debris.
Yeah.
More junk, pine cones, dirt, all kinds of crap comes flying in me, literally all over the shirt. I'm like, wow, I almost lose control of the car. It's the whole car fills with debris.
Right.
I think bug parts, I don't know, mouse droppings, who knows what comes through. So I'm laughing. I'm like, wow, this thing really well.
Might even get mouse parts and bug droppings.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a now, just so people can put a handle on this, there is a device now that eliminates all that. It's called a cabin air filter.
Yes.
Because that's what's in between you and that on a modern car. But yeah. All the cars.
It gets worse, because now, of course, what do you think I do to the other side? Because I only opened up one vent.
You open the other side, yes.
I open the other side.
Great.
And what happened?
Well,
get hit with more junk and debris.
I'll tell you the truth. It's not easy to clean that stuff out statically. That probably is the best way to do it. And right, since that is a convertible, I guess a lot of it might have gone up into the atmosphere.
But I should have put the top down, but no, I was vacuuming the underside of the top.
You know, I did a similar thing in my Pontiac, because the cables were used into the 70s for the heater controls on GM cars.
Right. Yeah, true.
You know, and I have floor vents in the car. Well, one of them I don't have anymore on the right side, because that's where the vintage AC took over that space with all the hoses going out. But I still have the left, and I removed them both. I think it might have even said in the instructions. I don't know. And then sometime after that, I realized, hey, I didn't have to remove the left one. There's nothing that goes in its place. And I put it back. I put that vent back. And it was a few years ago. It was maybe in the fall. It was either in the early spring or into the fall, where I was driving around, and I said, wow, I'm getting a cold breeze on me. Where the hell is this cold breeze? And I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, you know, I had the heat on. I'm like, no, I had that floor vent open. And it really does let in a lot of air.
It sure does. Yeah. That lets in a lot of other things.
You know,
too,
like the floor vents. Yeah, I missed the vent windows on the newer cars too, because they would. But of course, now everything, you just seal it up and you put the AC on and you're done with it. You know, but it was nice on the days where you didn't want AC to have the wing windows, or the people would call them, or the vent windows. I grew up calling them. It was nice. You know,
Yeah, you opened them up all the way and you had instant air coming.
Yeah.
In.
Sure.
And that was, I guess that was the goal of the cars before air conditioning, was to get the air in, get the air out.
Right.
I mean, that was basically what you were doing.
I'd even bought for my motorcycle, because it has a full fairing, and there's not a lot of air, a device called Air Wings. And what they do is you mount them on the fairing and it diverts air to the rider. But
because there's not a lot of air on a motorcycle. No, you need to divert air on a motorcycle.
Not on mine. Mine has a full fairing. It actually insulates the rider.
Right, you got a full windshield.
Let's go to the phone and the fun and say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Ray, Chris, it's Billy G.
Hey, Bill.
Billy Feldman. Right. How are you, my brother?
Good. So I'm actually calling in with a car question.
Oh.
You called
car
us?
Issue.
Okay.
What'd you call us for, Billy?
So are you ready for this? Sit down for this, because I just think you can work this out for me. So yesterday, after 12 years, we pulled out my friend Kenny's big block Chevelle. Okay.
Ooh, right.
It's got a 496 in it.
Oofa.
Wow.
It's an automatic. Okay. So we pull it out. We get in the air. We disconnect. It's an automatic. We disconnect the torque converter. Okay. Because we want to take the flywheel out. So, in doing so, to get the bolts, my job was to spin the motor. underneath with a ratchet, okay?
Okay,
got it.
So you got the good job.
I start to pull it around. It's tight, mm-hmm. all right? So we said, okay, you know what? Let's free it up a little bit. Let's take out a couple of spark plugs.
Oh, yeah, I would have taken them all out.
All right, this is the issue. I want to see if you guys could, you know, help me with this. So I take out, on the right side, I take out number four.
Right.
And on the right, and on the left side, I take out number three.
Okay.
Okay, go to spin it, same resistance.
Yeah,
sure.
I take out number two, four, I take out six,
mm-hmm.
and I take out five.
Okay.
Same resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, did I kind of like create like the equivalent of a Boxster engine where I still get that heavy compression because I only took out those?
Yeah.
If,
well, you know what you have, Bill? You have companion cylinders.
Exactly. That's what I was telling Kenny. I said, maybe we only took out companion cylinders. We're still working the same compression.
Right.
So we took them all out.
One and six are definitely. I know one and six are companion cylinders.
Which means that they fire at the same time.
They come up at the same time, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So basically, I was going from an eight cylinder to a four cylinder that was still making the same compression.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. You know, I just went through this on my Pontiac a few weeks ago. I wanted to re-index my distributor, and again, I had to turn it by hand. So I pulled out, did the same thing. I pulled out a couple plugs, but since it's a fresh motor, man, it was hard to turn, and I ended up just pulling them all out and said, okay, you know, let's just do it.
And then
good time to do a plug check, you know.
Yeah, and then I said, you know what? I'm going to save this for Ray and Chris. I said, because working on the firing order and working on companion cylinders, I said we may have a phenomenon here that it's still acting like a fully closed up engine.
Right.
All right.
Right.
And then once we took all out, and was able to spread the spin the motor, and then put a jack and took the tranny out, you know. I was actually able to work out the flywheel bolts with a box wrench.
Right. Well,
crazy as it sounds,
I'm curious why you would take it and disconnect into the torque converter. What was the purpose of that?
Well, the idea was we thought we were going to take the tranny out too.
Oh,
but I said, Kenny, I said, I can get my hands in there. And if I got a box wrench and a block of wood that I can whack the end of the box wrench, you know, being 25 inches off the ground to free those nuts and spin, you know, so we did that.
I was going to say, too, Bill, there is a tool that I bought many years ago. It's a flywheel turner. It's a metal shaft, and it has like a hook.
Right. I remember that. Yep.
You turn the flywheel with. And you know, Joe was just saying that's the sequence you're talking about. It's the same sequence you use to set the valve lash with the companion cylinders. You can do, you know, you do pairs of cylinders together, or valves at least, until then you crank it 90 and you do the others, and it's all written out.
Billy, how is the motor once you pull the plugs out of the engine? How was it to spin? Did it spin freely and there was no problems
with
spinning? Yeah,
it did. It was the same resistance. You know, it's not it's not a big compression motor. It's like a 10-to-1 motor. You know, 9/8-to-1 motor. I actually broke that in years ago on my '66 Corvette.
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to talk Kenny to putting a matching number motor into that 70 Chevelle, because I would take this motor and just stick it in the shed and eventually get the guts to stick it in my Nova.
now you sound like the guys at the UD.
Yeah, I know. But,
oh, boy.
But since there's no issues with the motor, Kenny said, no, Billy, he goes, I think I'll keep this in my... I said, okay. I said, because he said, why are you going to cannibalize that perfect Nova of yours anyway?
Good point.
He goes,
good point.
Because I can? Question mark.
Yes, well, exactly. Because it's there.
Right.
Yeah. So not to monopolize the minutes here, but I got a return question.
Right.
So now, after we put the flywheel in, is there a box wrench that would act as the equivalent of a torque wrench? Because to put a torque wrench on there, I need more clearance. I don't want to completely have to pull the tranny out of the car, because, you know, when you put the ratchet on with the torque wrench, you need that extra, like, inch and a half.
Okay, to answer that question, no, there is not. But what there is an extender.
Yeah.
And I got a couple of them. The thing you have to look at, though, is when you extend in a torque wrench lengthwise, like from the anvil out,
right,
you have to do a little bit of math, and you have to change the setting on the dial because you're increasing the angle arm momentum.
Right.
So you actually dial in less on the dial, and it's a straight up calculation. So if you have a manual from a torque wrench, they show you how to do that. And those extenders, you have to know they come in predetermined lengths. Usually, you know, I have a couple when I was doing the Hawley motorcycles for the heads, and they're usually like I think about an inch. I think I have an inch and maybe a 2-inch one. You can do that and use a standard torque wrench.
Yeah, my buddy Kenny's got the sophisticated tools with the crank. You said it. I have the old needle one, you know.
And I
know no matter how you grab a torque wrench, you got to grab it a certain way to get a correct positive reading.
In the center of the handle.
Yes.
But that's the thing. That, you know, the needle style, any torque wrench is going to work. It will work. It's just a matter of what you have and what you prefer. But again, you do, even on yours, Bill, you'd have to, if you put the extender on, you have to go to a lesser value of whatever the torque is,
right?
Because you've extended that arm. You can now. The other thing is, if you like, where you put the socket on a torque wrench, if you extend that down, like you could put a 6-foot extension on it that way, and the torque stays, the torque value stays the same. That doesn't change it, but going the other way does.
Okay, I didn't know. And then just in closing, I didn't know if there was like some type of gauge you could slide onto the sleeve to the end of a box wrench that would actually feel a calibration as you're pulling the wrench.
Yeah, not that I've seen. It's an interesting thought. It's an interesting, you know, maybe in some industrial things they may be, but I haven't seen it. I've always just used the extender.
All right.
And, you know, the extender is, Paul's talking about a torque multiplier, right? But still, that's a tough the thing Paul just said.
Right, and working with the drivetrain, that kind of defeats my torque specifications where you get on there with a box wrench and go, and that's like 20 pounds.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
But you know what? Sometimes if you grab the wrench and you got the right length and you know what your muscle capacity is, you can actually feel what 85 pounds feels like, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always wanted to be tested on that. Like, when I go like that, is that really 20 pounds? And when I go, is that really 50? You know, I always wanted to be tested on it.
Maybe surprised. Yeah, you may be surprised.
Yeah, how accurate one can be.
All right, Bill.
All right, but I appreciate your assistance on this one. So,
All right.
We'll talk. Thank you. Bye, guys.
All right. So long.
Thanks, Billy. Bye-bye. 516-572-7440 is the phone number. Right here at Motormouth Radio, where we are talking to ourselves on this bright spring summer day.
Yes, it is beautiful, I'll say that.
There is. Hey, you ever notice that, I know I do this every once in a while, and it really does burn my buttons. Do you ever notice that, do you ever break something while trying to fix something on your vehicle?
Yeah, that's happened, sure.
Does it happen like all the time, I do.
These days, it's more with like plastic clips. You're trying to take something apart, and you have to take the plug end off of something,
right?
And you got to like lift or push, and the plastic breaks. That's the most common because that stuff ages, you know, under the hood. Even though it's a good type of plastic, it's prone to breaking.
I must admit, I'm trying to clear off my shelves of any unnecessary fluids that I have on the shelf that I store. Because there's literally, you just acquire all kinds of oils and transmission fluids and power steering fluids and gear oil. And you just acquire it throughout the course of and it doesn't go bad. I don't think oil in a can, brand new oil, really goes south. I don't think that
really
happens.
I saw an article about that. Somebody wanted to know if the oil, they had a case of oil that was like 45 years old or more, and they were curious if it was still good. And they were doing some oil tests on it, and all. I didn't see the result. But
that'd be interesting to find out. But what my point is that I wanted to take whatever oils that I needed to put into my cars, just get them in. And so I can get the old oil out, take it to the dump, and at least what I would be doing is clearing my shelf for any other thing I need to put on there. So I went to the 300. I know I had a power steering leak, so I was able to pull the power steering pump out. I re-gooped the seal. I took it apart, regooped the seal and put it back together again and put it back in and basically used whatever power steering fluid I had in bottles on the shelf, brand new, put that in. Everything was fine. Fixed that problem. Then I went over to the rear end. I pulled the rear end oil out of there, which was the rear end. It was gear oil, a mixture of gear oil and Marvel Mystery Oil to try and fix that seal issue that I had, which didn't work.
Didn't you have a problem with the plug on the rear end? Were we talking about that a while ago?
No, I did not. The problem I had was Chrysler and its wisdom only gives you one plug, so you have to siphon out the fluid. You have to siphon out the gear oil.
You don't have a cover.
Right. So literally I got a turkey baster with a hose off it that I'm dropping it in there and sucking out the good amount of fluid. Not really. It was like skimming off the top of a 55 gallon drum with a salad spoon.
Well, that's leaking.
That's how long it took an hour just to get all the fluid out of there.
There's other ways you could do it. Transfer pump and things like that.
But I was under there just squeezing and squishing and doing whatever I was doing, trying to make a big mess.
Right.
So I was able to get that done. But in the process, I'm like doing all these things that I'm like accomplishing so much, and then I go over and take a look at the quarter panel on the car. Just walk right by it, and I look. I got two gashes in the paint on the quarter panel. I'm like, now how in the world did that get there?
Wow,
I didn't even do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, what in the world? I backed the car out. I'm like, what?
Right.
You get so frustrated, you want to just bang your head against the side of the car. So I had to mix new paint, duplicolor paint, because A, the car was repainted, and B, I don't know what color it is.
I know it's
green, but I don't know what type of green. So, of course, I had to go into that, like you all are impressed by, I have to go into that matching color mode.
Right.
And I use the most rudimentary bits of ingredients to match color. I have a can of duplicolor that I think I bought in 1979. It still has propane in it. It still has like aerosol in it. And you can still spray it. It's a green. It came from my mercury. Mm. And I sprayed that into a cup, and then I mixed up a little bit of other green, and I hold it right up to the fender of the car, and I spray a little bit of it. Hold it, spray, mix, with a screwdriver, no less.
Yeah.
And then I applied the paint with a toothpick.
Okay.
And believe it or not, it came out pretty well.
Right.
I just have to give it a slight 1500 grit sandpaper sand, a little wet sand to get it all to match up. But I'm like, I can't win.
Wow.
I'm making all these great advancements. I'm clearing up my shelf. Life is good.
Yeah.
I look down and I take a chunk out of the side of the car, and I don't even know how I did it.
Well, luckily it was a small one. It could have been somebody else. Could have been something else. You know, you don't
know. This is why I don't drive nice things.
Yeah.
It's just as simple as that.
You know, when you talk about the turkey baster, I have one at the shop. I have one in my toolbox at home. I use them all the time, and they're great. And that's how I suck master cylinders dry. I just did it on the FJ just the other day. I was just going through and looking at things under the hood, just wiping things down. I said, all right, I was going to do the master. But then I had my wife's car in the Cruise. I did the same thing. I adjusted her rear brakes, and I opened the hood, checked things out, and I said, let me just suck the fluid looked a little dark in the master cylinders. Let me take that out. Well, her master cylinder has, once you take the cap off, there's another like a disc with just a little square hole in it.
Really? It's not like a filter or anything?
No.
Usually it's like a screen or a filter?
That's a Japanese car that does that.
Ah.
So I couldn't get the turkey baster in there.
Couldn't get the disc out, huh?
No, it's part of the master cylinder reservoir. So what I did is, in the toolbox, one of my arsenal of master cylinder tools are these, they're big plastic syringes. I actually got them for motorcycle use. So, and that has a smaller hose on it, like a quarter inch hose. So I jammed it down in that hole because it's slippery with brake fluid.
And then
you just pull up on the syringe and it just pulls up about, 30 cc's of fluid. Put it into it, and I did that about four or five times and got all the fluid out and then just filled it with, because when you do that, my contention is I don't have the scientific evidence to back it up, and I've never done the actual measurements, because I contend that by just sucking the master cylinder dry and refilling it, you're taking probably 70% of the total fluid in the system out of the
car.
You
think it's that much?
I do. I do.
Really?
And, you know, I read a few things over the years that kind of bad. They said on some drum brake cars, it could be even up to maybe 80%. And again, I don't know if their data was real or if they were just postulating on it.
Right.
But I'll tell you this. You're getting a lot of fluid out because
yes.
what's in the lines is small. The most
you're
amount of fluid is going to be in the calipers, in the behind
sure.
the pistons of the calipers. So even if you're taking 50% of it out, you know, mm-hmm. if you did that, put fresh in, and then the next week or two, you know, because the fluid does cycle back and forth. People don't understand that. It does move.
I would hope it does.
It does. Because mm-hmm. How does it get dirty in a master cylinder again if you put clean fluid in there, right?
You're right.
It's not happening in the master cylinder. It's happening in the lines and the hoses. And then if you do that again, like I do it a couple times a year on all the cars,
mm-hmm.
you know. Do it in an oil change or whatever. I'll just suck the master cylinder dry and just refill it and we're done.
But you touched upon something that I've been actually practicing as well. And I've realized that if you can get 90% of the fluid exchanged with a minimal amount of fuss, it is worth so much more than going for 100% of the fluid and going through an all-day job.
Right.
And my point is the same thing you're saying. I was looking at how to exchange the coolant in my Mazda, the CX-9.
Right.
And you're using waterless coolant. That's what it says on the bottle, waterless coolant. And I went to Mazda and bought the coolant from the dealer because I didn't want to go through any sort of heartache with any other off-the-shelf auto store fluid. I just
right.
wanted the right peace of mind. That's all it was. But what I was told was you have to exchange the fluid by flushing it out with water. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is a problem here. So I thought, you know what? Not even going to be even bother. What I'm going to do is I'm going to dump the radiator and just close the radiator so I get that cleaned and then basically fill it up with fresh Mazda antifreeze, thinking
right.
the same way you're thinking, whereupon at least I know I got 40% of the fluid exchanged.
Right.
If that, maybe 50. I'm hoping for 50, but I know I got 40% guaranteed. So I'm going to wait a couple of weeks and then do it again.
Right.
And then do it again.
There you go.
And yeah, it's going to cost $100.
Yeah.
It takes no time at all. Uncap the bottom, fill it in the basin, close the cap, refill with fresh. You're done.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And that's it. So it's, but then if I had to exchange the entire amount of fluid, I'd have to go through the process of pumping it out and pumping water in and trying to pump the water out.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to know how the details, because at that point I went, nope.
Right. Hey, I got to tell you something. I stand corrected. Matt Goman Brian, I love having this guy in my corner. He's like so good.
Wealth of knowledge.
There's
yes.
a tool. That is, it's like the handle, the handle of a torque wrench with nothing on the end, and you put these open-end wrenches click in like you would.
You know, it's so funny because I was actually going to say, if anybody would know the answer to this question, it would be Matt Goman Brian.
And
if anybody knew the answer to an open-end or box wrench torque wrench,
yeah,
you would know.
This is a TLTWSM metric multi-head click torque wrench. So it's 17 millimeter. This is 17 to 29 millimeter. So that's not going to work on that Chevelle.
No,
it's not going to work on an
small
American car. But
it's not small.
No, that's too big.
17 to 29 is too big, yes.
Because the bolts on that flywheel should be probably, I guess they're going to be maybe
5/8, 3/4.
Yeah, that's about it. And that real flat head type.
Yes.
So anyway, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to do a piece. I'm going to talk about rats. And your car's internals when we come back from the break. But do we have a Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour?
Yes, we do, Ray. Of course. We do have a Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour, and this week is no different. If you have a mysterious stain on your seats. That's right. If you got in the car one morning and noticed a wet spot on the seat and wondered how the heck it got there. If you reach for something in the back seat and see a spot that shouldn't be there and wonder who was using the back seat and for what? If you attempt to scrub the offending spot and the darn thing still won't come out. you basically you start to relive every single moment you've been in the vehicle and suspect every family member that's a slob. Well, right. If you have a spot in your seat that you have no way of knowing how it got there, you are part of the Motormouth Radio on the Group of the Hour. So go get the scrub brush.
Nice. And in, it sounds like in your garage, that's a very possible.
Oh, it's guaranteed.
You know, you never know. Well, you see, you never have, know. And you know, most of us have these quasi-love affairs with our cars. You as well, even though you won't admit it. And you do know, and people will say that, yeah, it hurts. It hurts sometimes.
Sure does.
So let's take a break, and we'll come back with more Motormouth Radio. We're going to talk about rats in your car's internals when with a good piece that I have that I'll rip and read on Motormouth Radio. Yeah, with Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. Keep it where you got it, and let's hear about Chris's car woes right now from our good friends at Nazareth on WHBC 90.3. Show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
You're listening to the Motor Mouth.
Oh.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
Motor Mouth!
You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
No, hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
Motor Mouth!
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No, I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evan Root.
As always, you are consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming.
I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Obviously, I call wrong number by accident.
I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
So I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
Motor Mouth!
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Motor Mouth.
Coming up at 12 o'clock today, Sunday, Motor Mouth Radio, Ray Guarino, Joe D, talking about cars. And like I said, you don't have to know anything about cars to enjoy the show. People watch cooking shows, don't know how to cook. People watch those home repair shows, they don't know how to fix anything. So Motor Mouth Radio is the same thing. Think about it that way.
I also learned some of these promos are older in this in the vault. So we're back with Motormouth Radio.
Just call me Joe.
yeah, it's a little older. But we're still cooking here, and love still hurts. So we have proved that our points are well taken, I think. So
that is true. And remember, don't settle for the cheap original. Don't settle for those cheap imitations. Settle for the cheap original. That's us, Motormouth Radio.
Right.
Thank you very much. Just had to throw that out there.
Right.
Speaking of old promos, old cheap promos, and your calls at 516-572-7440. Before we get to that piece, Ray, I just want to ask you, whatever happened with the coolant temp sensor on that Buick Grand National? Was there ever a resolution to that?
No, the way it got left off was...
Car overheats and that's the end of it. Drive it in December.
No, and that's the thing. Scott, this guy Scott, who comes on the Thursday Night Planet Traffic Show, had asked me that on Thursday. He goes, "Hey Ray, what's up with the whatever happened with the with the Buick?" And I'm like, "You know what? I'm going to say it's fixed." And I had a report back to Mike about this too. I said, "You know, the car is fixed. I don't know. I feel bad to say this, but I've had to say it before. I don't know how, and I don't know why. But what happened was I was just doing more and more testing. And right. I did where I left it last week. I remember that the HVAC display in that car is digital, which they...
I'm looking at it now, yeah, on the Instagram, okay. on your Instagram. Yeah, it's digital. I'm like, wow, I haven't seen that in a Grand National. They, usually it's the old style.
They all weren't. Many of them were manual with the cables.
Yes, manual with the cables. That's why I'm shocked to see this.
And the picture you're looking at, you actually see it lit. You see the buttons lit.
Yeah. Yes, well, it, sure do.
Well, when I looked at it that day when I was getting ready to leave, it wasn't lit. I couldn't activate it. It was dead.
Oh.
And I said, oh, God, now what? So I went home, and I did research, and I found that they said the most common problem, well, the board goes bad, of course.
Of course. General Motors, yeah.
But also,
surprise.
Yeah, also they said, you know what? There's a fuse in the fuse box, a 25-amp fuse that powers that thing. I was like, well, look, I got to check the obvious, you know. So the next day I went and checked. I pulled that 25-amp fuse, and it was blown.
Wow.
And I said, oh. So I plugged a new one in, and it didn't blow, and then the thing lit up, and I said, okay. So I, again, continued with my relay tests. I brought my set of relay sockets, which you would see there on, you'll see it in one picture. It's a yellow block. That
yes, I saw
and
that.
And I'm probing it with a test light. What these things are is, okay, if you want to test the operation of a relay, you know, when a relay sits in a socket, you don't have access to the pins. You can back probe from the bottom sometimes, but that's hard to do sometimes. It's not always easy, and a lot of people don't like, you know, showing.
Right, or you kind of like jockey the relay out just a little bit so you can get the probe needles in there. Yeah, it's shaky.
So what this thing does is you remove the relay from the socket.
Right.
This block plugs in place of the relay, and the kit that I have has like five. Joe actually bought that for me. He gave it for me, I think, for my birthday.
Four. I see this.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
cool.
There's a couple of them for different. But the yellow one is the one for the Bosch, just the typical Bosch relays. So you plug this into the socket, and then you plug the relay into the top of the block. So it's a pass-through. But on the outside of the block, there's five little legs, and they are connected to each of the relay terminals. So now you just clip on those. So
easy breezy.
At one point, I found I didn't have ground on the relays. I was like, huh? I got no ground on terminal 85. Power's 30, 85 is ground. And, you know, before I didn't have actuation on 86. I didn't have my feed. So now the problem is moving on me. I'm like, why don't I have ground? So
you're chasing it.
When I applied a manual ground, I said, okay, now I actually felt the relay click. And that's what I'm doing. I'm using the test light, and I'm actually grounding pin 30, that'd be bad, that's power, pin 85, and I felt the relay click, and I'm saying, all right, so let me try something. So I started the car. I already had it kind of pre-warmed up. I let it warm up. I was using the scan tool to read the engine temperature, because it reads it through the computer, and lo and behold, when it got warm enough, the relay clicked, and the fan came on. I'm like, oh, look, it worked.
Wow.
So, yeah, is it fixed? Yeah. What did I do? I just kind of jostled things. I gave ground where it needed ground. I gave power where it needed power. I kind of like, it was kind of like using defibrillator paddles, I think. You know, it was like,
yeah,
like in V-fib. You know, I just kind of.
Maybe that blown fuse, that blown 25-amp fuse could have something to do with it.
You know, I don't know. I don't remember, because I wasn't looking at the panel from the get-go. I don't know if that was blown, because I was looking for the fuse for the relays. I wasn't looking for anything else. I was trying to determine. Maybe that's where it fed through. I don't know. I'll tell you this. On the schematics I have, it didn't show it through that panel. It showed it either through the fuse box or out into the ozone. So I guess I'm
in shock, because you fix something with the result that I would probably say.
But this has happened. This has happened more than once in the shop where that's happened on an older car. And I keep forgetting, this is an older car, even though it doesn't have a lot of miles in it. It doesn't get used. That's the problem. when things don't get used, it's as bad as when they get, at least when they get worn out, you could point to it. This was a problem which happens all too often, giving me conflicting information and information that didn't make sense. So, yeah. So now the family's working. So that's like I said to you earlier, Mike was going to take it out and take it for a drive and see what. And I haven't heard back, so I guess everything was okay.
So. Right. No news is good news. That's what we like to hear.
Let me tell you about a problem one of the guys from your neighborhood has. One of your old buddies. Elon Musk has a rat problem.
Yeah.
Remember him from high school, right?
I heard something about this, but please continue.
Well, I'm going to boil down this story so it's talking points. There was a New York City woman who bought a 2018 model Tesla 3 into a New Jersey dealership because her AC.
Oh, New Jersey.
Yeah. Well,
I thought it was in the Bronx, but go right ahead.
She's from the Bronx, I think.
Oh, she's from the Bronx.
And
okay.
She brought it in there. Now, there's a Tesla dealer in Brooklyn. I don't know. Who knows why she went there? I don't know. Anyway, the AC wasn't working. And when they opened the glove box, I guess, to do some diagnosis, a rat fell out. Yeah. They didn't say if it was alive or dead, but it fell out. I would assume it was probably dead.
Right.
So the rat found it. This is according to the article, which is a little, it wasn't perfect, but they said the rat found its way in by chewing on the wires and then somehow getting through the firewall, I would imagine. And the reason the rat liked them so much, this is shades of our good old friend Mike Landry. I thought of Mike, God rest his soul, when I read this. Because the wires are wrapped in a soy-based material rather than an oil-based, which makes them tasty. Remember on his Azera? Was it the Azera or the car he had before that?
Right. No, I think, he had a problem. I think it was the car before that.
Mike said he threw his injector harness like three times down in Long Beach where he had lived.
Right, because the rodents kept eating his wires.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the Tesla now has this soy-based wires that are very tasty to rodents. So the repair took more than a month, and it cost over $5,000. And it isn't covered under warranty.
Why would it?
So I said, well, why would it also? Well, Tesla contends that, and this is a quote from the article, the use of this material would not be considered a defect in design or use. And we cannot cover this under warranty because of that. And because of that, other car manufacturers have had the same issue and claim the same thing.
Now the big fat question is, how do you prevent rodents from actually nibbling on something that is tasty to them? Because usually when they're eating your wires, they're desperate. They're eating plastic. They're desperate. And now they're eating something that's actually favorable to them.
Right, right.
And really, it's terrible to the car owner. But now, what do you do? Put the car in a bag? I mean, what can you possibly do to prevent a rodent from getting in your vehicle? I mean, you and I have dealt with this many times on cars. I had an Oldsmobile one time that was probably said on the side, rodent buffet.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this car, I couldn't keep the mice out of the car.
Well, if you remember, our friend Steve Linden had talked about that because he has his car in a barn on the north shore of Long Island. And he tried everything, dryer sheets,
mothballs,
latrine cakes, all sorts of crap. Yeah. I think even with his research, he didn't find anything that definitively worked.
It's tough.
But the funny thing is, the takeaway from this is they said, I got this out of the New York Post. And they didn't immediately receive or reply for their request for comment from Tesla, which is owned by Musk, of course.
Right.
Elon Musk went by the nickname Muskrat as a child, according to a 2009 New Yorker profile. So,
gee,
it's kind of coming back to bite him. So,
you can have billions of dollars, you can still keep the same nickname,
Muskrat, and then it comes back, and your car's being eaten by rats.
Yeah. That's funny, yeah. But there are huge, like, kind of like clear bags that you can bring a car in and zip it up. But who in their right mind is going to do something like that every single evening instead of leaving the car outside?
I've been very fortunate with the cars. My house, I haven't had a problem. In the storage garage that I have my Fiat in, there are mice. And I find the mice bait inside the cars, like in the rocker panel. But I haven't found any mice in that car, which is good.
Wow.
Let's go to the phones. Let's see if we have an answer. We'll go to the phones and the fun and say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
No, just too much fun, gentlemen.
Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. Happy Sunday. I have a question for you guys.
Okay, sure.
And it's a question that's been around for as long as I've been interested in vehicles. Cranny fluid.
Yeah.
All right. I just what happened was I bought the, I don't want to name the manufacturer. I bought one of the cars into the dealership for a 75,000 mile service with 85,000 miles on it. So I'm not too far out.
Right.
And I've had a relationship with these guys forever. And I trust them. They didn't want to change the training fluid.
Oh, did okay.
Not. Yeah, they didn't want to change it. Now, I've heard arguments for the turbo 400s and 350s, et cetera.
Bob, did they say why they didn't want to change it?
They said there could be an issue later on.
You know, I've heard of people, somebody had told me this, that they brought their car in, a newer car, and it had now like maybe 10,000 miles on it or whatever, and they wanted an oil change. The manufacturer didn't call for the oil change, or maybe they had like 6,000. It called for it like 8,000 or 10,000. They refused to do the oil change on the vehicle. He said, listen, I don't care. I don't want it under warranty. I'll pay for the oil change. I just want you to do it. And they flatly refused. They said, no, that's not on our schedule. We can't cover your car if we do that. He's like, what? It's an oil change. So, yeah, I've heard of that before. It's crazy, but I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because if I bring it to the manufacturer and if for something else, I'm like, look, as long as it's on a lift, I'll pay it for the oil change. And they've always been good.
Yep.
But this, so I ran it by the service rider, and then I talked to the mechanic on the side. I kind of know him a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, listen, sometimes when they change a tranny fluid at, training fluid is 10 years old.
Right.
Right.
It's 10 years old. You know, it's a third car to get us someplace when we need another vehicle.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Right. He's like, he said, leave it alone.
Okay.
I just wanted your take on that.
Well, I'll tell you this. Yeah. You know, we've all had cars that had transmission fluid that hadn't been changed for a long time, either because we bought the car and you look at the fluid and said, oh my God, this stuff is probably original. And those transmissions, Chris, you said you had trouble when you changed the fluid. You had trouble. So
there was a time I did. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, where they're going. Yeah.
But that's the question that Bob, I would love to know what their reasoning was for telling you no. Because if they're saying, well, it's fluid and it doesn't have to be changed, I think that's a load of donkey dust, if you ask me personally.
No, there wasn't that. I guess my take was, one is I trust them. You have to trust your attorney and you have to trust your mechanic.
True.
Sure. If you don't, you're in trouble.
Yes.
So I ran it by him, and he goes, leave it alone. He goes, sometimes when we change a tranny fluid, because I guess that was 10 or 15 or 20,000 miles over the recommended service for the tranny.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, sometimes when we change it, it loosens up too much. And obviously, there's going to be some debris in there, of course, right?
Yeah, but that's the job of the filter to catch that. You know, the transmission fluid is an abrasive, and I've heard of complaints where they, you know, old fluid was in the car, so everything was kind of soft. They put fresh fluid in, which is more abrasive, and it ate up some of the clutch material, and then they had to rebuild the transmission.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So now, I say this, either leave it forever, or you do it on a regular basis, at least according to the recommendation.
But I got to admit, I would definitely do it. If I was going to change the fluid and had my heart set on it, it would probably be at the 75,000 mile mark. That's probably where it would be. If you still told me 150,000 miles and you're thinking about changing it, I think my answer would be different.
Well,
but at 75,000 miles,
I just did my the FJ at 130. I got it at 130.
Really?
I said, you know what, I'm going to do the tranny fluid, and I did, and no problem.
I tell you, I did the same thing on my Mazda, and as we were talking about just the simple fluid change, the Mazda has an internal filter that you have to break the whole transmission apart to access the filter, which I wasn't going to do.
Right.
So what I did was I did exactly what we were talking about earlier in the show. I dumped out a bunch of literally a couple of whatever would come out of the transmission. I dumped it out and capped it up and refilled it with the dealership transmission.
You have to use a correct fluid, yes.
Yeah, thinking the same thing that Ray was saying, that you're going to replenish at least, you're going to revitalize at least 50% of the system. At least. Right. And you know what? I'm slated to do it again. I'm going to do it again probably in the fall.
Right.
I've been informed on that process over the decades. You dump half and you add another 3 or 4 quarts to refresh what you have. And I can say another thing. You know, the Chevy dealer said, no, we don't do that. The Chevy said, you know, for the truck, we use a machine that completely flushes the system. Yes. That's our method.
Right. And a lot of independent shops have that machine also. Yeah.
You know, they suck it out. And actually, as it gets to a point where it's very low, it actually goes in as you're taking the remainder of it out. It's really wild.
It's like getting a blood transfusion. It really is, because they're taking the old fluid out of one arm and putting a new in the other. That's really what it is. They're doing a transfusion. They use a lot of fluid. It gets expensive because they do use a lot of fluid. Now, if you got a Chevy, but if you had a Mercedes or an Acura, something that where the fluid is like, you know, $12 a quart, it gets real expensive real fast.
Oh, it's easily that. Sure. Yeah, it's easily that.
See, people should buy stick shifts.
But Bob, my fear is that they're telling you not to change the fluid because they want you to keep using the car with the existing fluid, so that after 150,000 miles, you're going to need new transmission.
Right.
That's my fear, that's what their theory is, and they'll never admit that.
No, I don't have that relationship with them.
Okay, good.
I had also asked them, I said, how about taking half of it out? He goes, just leave it alone. So I have to trust him. You know, and I do trust him.
Yeah.
So
to a degree, you do. You're right.
Mm-hmm. That was just a thing. You know, he's like, we've changed tranny fluids before. This car happens to be well taken care of. Other than I'm delinquent here.
Right.
So we have had other customers that come back 3 days later, and they need a tranny.
Yeah. Right. So, well, Bob, keep us up on that. Let us know how that progresses.
We can talk about that in another 75,000 miles.
Okay. I would love to know. Yeah, I personally would love to know.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great weekend, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Robert.
So long.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, that's one of the biggest questions we've always gotten asked between oil changes and transmission services.
Very true. And,
you know, a lot of the things is still with the bigger vehicles. They do recommend a transmission cooler if there isn't one. A lot of them have them installed already, but
sure,
if not,
is the enemy.
Yeah,
but as you mentioned, I always talk about that Lincoln that I had that had like 300,000 miles on it.
Yeah,
and I dumped the transmission fluid and put in fresh fluid, and the car wouldn't shift into high gear.
Right,
it literally would go into high gear on the highway, and then it would drop back into second. So I brought the car home. I put the old transmission fluid, took off the new fluid, put the old transmission fluid back in the car, and then it would shift into third gear. Now, this I always say, a lot of times automatic transmissions are like magic in a box.
Yeah.
I chalk that up to, okay, problem solved. Sure. Don't do that again. But these were extreme conditions. It was a car. It was only a $1,000 car. And they say they're only with tongue in cheek. But still, it was a car that I was just basically learning on. And it was something that it wasn't like a $20,000 car or a $40,000 car, like you say, a Mercedes.
Right.
It was a 20-year-old Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
It was a beater. Yeah, exactly.
Well, like so I said, I did my car at 130 with no adverse effects. I did my daughter's, her car was over 100,000. No problem.
Did you notice a performance issue before and after?
No.
I could tell you one that I noticed.
Shifted the same. Yeah.
When I would come down a hill on the Merritt, actually I could tell you even the exit. It's exit 34. Uh-huh. You come down the hill and the tranny would drop out of high gear into second and give you like this jerk,
right.
Almost like when you pounce on the brake and the car goes like, well, that's the way it felt.
Our
and my wife would look
that.
at
Yeah.
My wife would look at me and she'd go, what are you doing? I'm like, I didn't do it. It was the transmission.
Our cruise does that. They're all different.
Here's what I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's what I did. When I changed the fluid, it went away. The transmission did what it was supposed to do. It would go out of high gear and into second in a nicer way, in a smoother way, and it wouldn't give you that jerk. Mm-hmm. Now it's starting again.
Huh.
I did the training literally last year. Right. The fluid. Now it's starting again. Huh. I'm getting that little. It's a little jolt.
Right.
And I'm like, I got to change the fluid again, and I'm going to do it.
Right.
So it's one of those things that I'm all for changing the fluid, but hold your cards and letters, like I always say.
Yeah.
But personally, I am an example of actually doing it. That's me. I'm an example of doing it, of saying yes to it and not avoiding it. But I always think a lot of times dealers don't want to be bothered. Maybe they don't want to send the car out and get the fluid done. Maybe they don't want to fire up the machine.
You know, with the dealers, I think it's all protocol of what comes from the mothership. If it's not dictated from up above, they're not doing it. It's like a military thing. They're just not going to do it.
Yeah, good point, because now they have to explain themselves. No, I understand, because they've used a certain amount of transmission fluid. Well, why'd you do that? You know, was this car slated for transmission service? No, it was 10,000 miles earlier. Then you shouldn't have done it. Now you have to explain yourself. You know, that could have happened. I totally can see that happening. Yeah. Like you say, the question and answer sermon from the mothership, from almighty Chevrolet and General Motors. Yeah.
Or they won't cover the repair or the warranty. They say, no, that's on you then, you know. So
right, exactly.
And no, you know, they might have been clamped down on now tighter than before, which is possible.
Oh, I'm sure General Motors is watching their nickels and pennies. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, nowadays, yes, I certainly think I think all companies are. When before General Motors, the mighty general, was never, whatever, spend money, who cares, you know.
Well, like Bob said, you know, the days of turbo 400s and turbo 350s, you know, it was easy to do, it was no big deal, and you didn't have the problems that you have with electronic transmissions with the early ones. Things were totally different, you know.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. No, things were. Yeah. No, I totally understand. It's like you say, it is one of our more controversial topics.
And like Brian said, it's just like the Sinju syndrome, right? Sinju touched my transmission. Well, now my tire pressure monitor keeps going off. And now my cup holder is cracked. I want you to fix it for free. Well, I'll tell you what, since we started doing this, we've started to run out of time. So,
wow.
We're going to get out of here, let Kim come in and do Thunder Road, and we'll be back next week. Guess maybe, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. But
we'll see.
What are we going to say, Chris?
Since you followed us home, don't follow us home.
Right. And we'll see you next week on Motor Mouth Radio. Ray Guarino for Chris Switzer. We'll see you next week.
Bye. See you, bye.
On 90.3 WHBC. Check next week.